Welcome to this podcast episode of Narcissists in Divorce, The Narcissist Trap. I'm Dr. Supriya McKenna. I'm a former family doctor, but my life's true work is working with people who have fallen prey to narcissistic relationships of any kind. But I'm particularly busy in the area of divorce. Over the last few years, I've been very proud to become an Amazon best-selling author on the subject of narcissism, and my brand new book, Narcissists in Divorce, From Love Locked to Leaving, is out right now on Amazon. That's the first book in the Narcissists in Divorce series, and the follow-on to that will be out in the spring, and that's called Narcissists in Divorce, From Leaving to Liberty. And please do note that although I use the word divorce, these books are equally applicable to anyone leaving a serious intimate relationship with a narcissist, whether they are married or not. I also have a book out called The Narcissist Trap, The Mind-Bending Pull of the Great Pretenders. And that book might be useful in helping the people around you who are supporting you to understand more about what happened to you and about narcissism generally. I'm also the co-author with British divorce lawyer Karen Walker of Narcissism and Family Law, a practitioner's guide. And between us, Karen and I have trained thousands of family law professionals in narcissistic personality disorder, including judges, lawyers, mediators, and social workers. For further narcissism resources from me, please do visit thelifedoctor.org or drsupriya.com, and that web address has the doctor fully spelt out. Welcome to this episode of our podcast, Narcissists in Divorce, The Lure, The Loss, and The Law, with me, Dr. Supriya McKenna, and my co-host, Karen Walker. Karen and I are the co-authors of the Amazon number one bestseller, Divorcing a Narcissist, The Lure, The Loss, and The Law, and of Narcissism and Family Law, a practitioner's guide. Together, we've trained thousands of family law practitioners in narcissistic personality disorder, including those at the highest levels. Karen is one of the UK's top family lawyers with over 30 years' experience. A former family doctor, I now work exclusively in the field of narcissistic relationships, directly with those who have fallen prey to such relationships, whether those relationships are at home, at work, or anywhere else. I'm also pleased to say that my online courses, including Is My Partner a Narcissist? Knowing for Sure, and Demystifying the Narcissist, are available now, and the Divorcing a Narcissist online course will be on its way soon. So please do head on over to drsupriya.com or to thelifedoctor.org for updates and information. Well, today I'm really pleased to be able to welcome back to the podcast the one and only Dr. Eleanor Greenberg, who you will have undoubtedly come across if you've ever Googled narcissism. Dr. Greenberg is an internationally renowned licensed clinical psychologist, and she specialises in teaching psychotherapists across the globe how to diagnose and treat those with narcissistic personality disorder, as well as those with borderline and schizoid adaptations. She's a member of the New York Institute for Gestalt Therapy. She's on the faculty of the Gestalt Center for Psychotherapy and Training. And she's an associate editor of Gestalt Review, which is a peer-reviewed professional journal. She's been in this field for a very long time indeed, graduating in psychology in 1970 and receiving her PhD in psychology in 1979. Eleanor is the author of the book Borderline, Narcissistic and Schizoid Adaptations, The Pursuit of Love, Admiration and Safety. And she's a prolific writer on the subject of personality disorders for the general public, including on Quora.com and PsychologyToday.com. She's arguably the person who has increased the general public's awareness of narcissistic personality disorder more than any other, on a worldwide scale, with her articles on Quora.com receiving more than 1.8 million views every single month. And even more excitingly, Eleanor's new book will be out in the summer. It's called Understanding Narcissism, From Dating to Mating and After.
What's the best way, do you think, to spot a narcissist on a date?
Well, there's a few ways. It took me a long time to learn to diagnose. Mm-hmm. And I realized I'm always looking for simpler and simpler things. The hardest thing is to teach people with no psych background how to diagnose well enough to dismiss narcissists before they get seriously hurt. However, most of us can count to four. Mm-hmm. And if you can count to 10 and you spend an hour, and you can spend more than an hour if you like, because you might not believe it the first time. If you want to know if someone's going to have a toxic influence on your life, forget their diagnosis. Yeah. Who wants to be with someone that you're going to end up regretting mm-hmm. being with, who you're going to dread seeing, who is going to make you feel bad, right? Nobody, unless you're super masochistic and that's your kink, mm-hmm. is going to like that. So all you have to do is spend an hour with the person and count how many negative things they say in that hour. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who they say it to. It doesn't matter what it's about. Mm-hmm. Just negative things, like they complain about the waiter. They tell you how their boss was mean to them that day. Mm-hmm. They don't like something that somebody's doing or wearing. Mm-hmm. The key thing is negative. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't think this is a real, if you think they're just having a bad day and anybody could have a bad day, spend an hour on a different day. Do your count. Mm-hmm. If you get up to four, ditch them.
So four in an hour.
Four in an hour. If you're a 10, really bury them. Dig a hole, put them in it.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Run away. Escape through the bathroom window.
Forget it. But if four is the max, you know, you're up to four now. Do you really want to be with someone that every hour can find four things wrong with life?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. You don't need to diagnose anybody with that.
Exactly. So I like to keep these things simple. Unless you're looking for a Debbie Downer, guys can use it as women. Four things in an hour she's complaining about, two things in an hour. Most people, if they you go somewhere nice and you're having a good time, maybe they don't like the wine or something, or they're facing and they're in a draft. But there are some people that are always in a draft,
yes.
that never like the, it's never the right wine, it's never the right thing, or it's always a little something.
If someone has had a difficult time or a bad day and they're telling you about it, but they're not complaining about it. What about that?
Well, let's imagine we're on a first date.
Okay.
First date is to see if you're going to like each other. See if you smell good, look good, taste good if you get mm-hmm. to kiss each other, to see if there's some magic, mm-hmm. some things. It's not about mm-hmm. their childhood, your childhood, or what happened to them earlier with mm-hmm. someone else. You're not their dumping ground. You're not their therapist. You're someone that they're looking to see and have a good time with, and that you have a good time while you're with them. So it would have to be something pretty horrible to tell someone on the first date. And it would only be like, I'm really sorry to bringing this into our date, but I got fired this morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if I seem a little off, I'm really happy to be here, but I'm kind of like still in shock. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to let you know that's not you if you pick up anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, but you can't be fired that many times.
Yeah, yeah.
It can't always be they're having a big shock, because then you're back and eye it. Mm-hmm. Let them get a therapist.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's important for people also who've been in narcissistic relationships. I think they might sort of have a tendency on these first dates to sort of overshare, and it can come across as being quite negative if they've come out of a really difficult relationship themselves.
Yes, I tell people that. Somebody asked on Quora, should I tell them in the first date that I've been narcissistically abused and I'm very sensitive? And I said, no. You might as well paint a victim sign on you saying, I've been abused.
Yeah.
You know, will you abuse me too? I hope not.
Exactly. And similarly, on dating profiles, people like to sort of put things like looking for someone who's truthful and has empathy, no time wasters, no game players. You know, they'll put things like this. And you can tell from that they've been hurt in the past. They're sort of putting it up there. I've been hurt. Well, you're asking for trouble almost, because a narcissist will sniff that out, those vulnerabilities, and go for it. And they can see that from your dating profile if you put that.
Or you might be repelling people who you might like.
Yeah.
It's a little too much information. Yeah. It's not their responsibility to take on your emotions. The first couple of dates is to see if you have a connection of any kind. So I think that that's a bit unwise and a bit unfair. People want to have a good time on the first date.
Yeah.
Did I mention the 10-minute rule? It only takes 10 minutes to really see what someone's going to be like when it's not.
No.
Okay. Well, first dates are a wonderful opportunity because they're a little like first sessions in therapy. Mm-hmm. And almost everyone I've ever known, probably everyone, is anxious when they meet their therapist for the first time.
Yes.
And whatever they do when they're anxious to manage their anxiety is what you're going to see in the first 10 minutes in therapy. And I don't think it's that different than the first, I'll say 10 to 20 minutes, how someone's going to present themselves on the first date, because they will be anxious. They will feel some anxiety and desire to be liked and hope this will work out. So all you learn to do after years and years of doing this in therapy is pay attention to whatever the person does and says in those first 10 minutes. And it's very instructive. Mm-hmm. If the guy, let's imagine you're on a first date with a guy and he sits down and he tells you he's wearing a Gucci blazer out of the air. I mean, you didn't ask him. Mm-hmm. Somehow in the first 10 minutes, you find out that he knows someone important. He makes a lot of money and he's wearing designer clothing. So I know that when he's anxious, he uses narcissistic defenses against anxiety, which is to exhibit what is special about him, which is who he knows, what it costs, and what's associated with it. So that's an exhibitionist narcissist first 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so what about a devaluing narcissist?
Okay, the devaluing narcissist, you sit down, and they say, oh, I didn't expect you to have that accent. But somehow you have already not met their expectations.
Or they might be devaluing someone else. I actually went on a date. This sticks in my mind. And it was definitely with a devaluing narcissist. And I picked it up actually within the first 10 minutes. Quite proud of myself for picking that up quickly. But there was a woman who was very overweight on the table next to us. To the side of me, so I couldn't really see, I hadn't really noticed her. The narcissist pointed this out and actually said, it's putting me off my food. Now, this person himself was pretty rotund, I have to say. This was not a very slim person himself. Oh, it's disgusting. How could she be out in public eating? It just puts people off their food. He actually said that within the first 10 minutes of a date, which I thought was marvellous.
Oh, you dated him too. A lot of people have dated that guy. I dated him too. You know, I went with somebody and he said, can you believe what that woman's wearing? Doesn't she know that women her age and size should have a little self-respect? And the other part of it that's narcissistic is because they lack emotional empathy. People with narcissistic personality disorder, they don't care that the other person might overhear. So this is the tip off. You're cringing because you have emotional empathy and you don't want to hurt another person. And they are complaining about somebody in a devaluing way who might even overhear them because they're not governing how loud they're saying it. Were you concerned on that date that that woman might even hear?
I think it was pretty noisy, so I didn't think she could hear. But I almost felt that it was projection. So obviously it was devaluing, but it was like he was projecting his own disgust because he was definitely overweight onto this woman about his own sort of overweightness, if you see what I mean, because he couldn't take it on himself.
Well, you're saying something very interesting, because my daughter, Karen Arluck, is a therapist too, and she has the same specialties that I do. And I didn't really expect her to become a therapist. I should have, because when she was 15 and dating a lot, she wrote a book with one answer on a page, 50 Reasons Not to Date a Narcissist.
Oh, really?
And she was 15 at the time. And we thought about selling it, you know, at the checkout counters and in grocery stores, you know, where they have these little cute little books for the holidays. And I only remember one of the ones, and your memory, it triggered my memory. One of hers was, when they feel fat, they send you to the gym.
Well, how did she know that at 50? Well, obviously she had you as a mother, so I suppose.
She grew up in a house with me, and she grew up surrounded. My girlfriends were therapists, and it was part of the social capital of being there. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really an interesting observation, as you said, for a 15-year-old. When I was 15, I hadn't put this all together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're on this date with a person.
Yeah.
So in the first 10 minutes, the person is quiet. And then you find yourself making the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So what do they do when they're anxious?
They shut down.
They shut down. And who's doing all the work? You.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something you want in your life? You don't even have to diagnose them. That's what I like about this kind of thing. You just have to decide. People get anxious a lot in your life. Can you tolerate what this person does when they're anxious? Now, I went with guys who went for a drink when they're anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to live with an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So his way of handling his anxiety was going to make it a bad match.
Yeah.
So the guy sits down with you, and he says, before we start talking, I'd like to order a drink.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm really thirsty.
Yeah.
So what that tells you, that more important than talking to you when he's anxious, he's going to order a drink.
Yeah.
And periodically he keeps ordering a drink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's something that people can learn to pay attention to and not make excuses for.
Mm-hmm.
Think of another one. What's something that someone did to you on a date or in the 10 minutes?
So you've mentioned the going quiet. That has actually happened to me. What was interesting about this was quite an articulate person and somebody who actually is sort of known for their writing. So very, very articulate, and yet could say barely anything. So I ended up, as you say, doing all the talking and feeling utterly exhausted by the end, completely drained of energy. I sort of kind of crawled out of there, you know, absolutely exhausted.
Exactly. That happened to me with a famous comedian and writer. And we put together, I was much younger than him. I was very impressed. I won't give his name.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the worst dates, not because he was bad to me,
mm-hmm.
but because he was quiet and he wasn't at all. He wrote funny songs. Mm-hmm. He wrote funny books. Mm-hmm. He was extremely well known for his humor and things like that. And he was just quiet. And I was so much younger than him that I really didn't know how to handle the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think I tried to talk to him, but I felt like I was boring him.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't trying to entertain me at all. You know, the other one would be the guy mm-hmm. who becomes super entertaining at the beginning and tells a lot of jokes and things like that. It depends what you like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep your eyes open, your ears open, you will get a sample of what you're going to get later.
Yeah, because there's that extra stress, that's going to make them reveal who they really are, whatever defenses they're going to use that are going to endure through the relationship and actually pop up. They're going to then feel more comfortable with you and possibly be able to disguise who they are a bit more. But then later on, those things that happen in the first 10 minutes are going to come back and be quite important in the relationship.
Yeah. Like a more subtle devaluation, you come in and you're on this date and he's already seated, but you're on time. And he says, oh, I'm glad you finally came. I thought you were going to be late.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. How does that make you feel? Is this person lead with kindness? Does mm-hmm. this person lead with a compliment?
If you're wondering whether your partner really is a narcissist, please do check out my online course, Is My Partner a Narcissist? Knowing for Sure. And if you want to understand narcissistic behaviours, you may be interested in my Demystifying the Narcissist online course. Both are available on drsapria.com.
They may have had bad experiences in the past with people being late, but they're putting that on you. They've kind of transferred that over to you. They don't know you from Adam. You haven't uttered a word at this point, and you're on time, but they're putting all their experiences with women or whatever onto you. You're no different to any of the others. You know, I thought you were going to be a, you know, in fact, somebody did say that to me once. They said, I thought you were going to be a diamond. Now I realise that you're just costume jewellery.
Oh my God.
That was another date with another narcissist. Yes, that was also on a first date.
Can you imagine?
I want to sort of give these illustrations because actually these are real life illustrations. And so what you're saying is right. It's true. And that's why I'm giving you actual examples.
Thank you.
Of things that have actually happened to me. Narcissists actually devalue to that extent. I thought you were a diamond in the rough, but it turns out you're just costume jewelry.
Yes, and there we see the splitting and the devaluation that for narcissists, because they don't have whole object relations, I'll briefly say what that is. As children, we develop the capacity, if we have good enough parenting and rather stable parenting in which, yes, we're punished when we do something wrong, but we really kind of feel like our parents love us. They don't switch from loving to hating us. We're not the target of abuse. As we start to develop around the age of two, the ability to integrate good mommy with bad mommy. Good mommy, I love you, mommy. You're the best mommy in the whole world. Bad mommy, you go to the grocery with mommy. You want candy. Mommy says, no, you're tired and grumpy. You're the worst mommy in the whole world. Bad mommy, I hate you. Well, kids get over that and they begin to recognize that you're the same mommy and that they have a long-term relationship with you and they don't want to hurt you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they begin to integrate that good mommy can act bad at times, but she's still a good mommy. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get that in childhood, you can get it as an adult. I wrote an article on how to get it as an adult on my Psych Today, Understanding Narcissism blog, how to get a whole object relationship as an adult. But if you don't have it, what happens is you're still like a three-year-old or younger splitting into all good and all bad, and there's nothing in between. So for a narcissist, all good equals special, perfect, unique, entitled to not pay attention to the rules other people have. Live by high status, omnipotent, you know everything, yeah. You're the best at everything, etc. And the other box is the worthless box. You're stupid, you're defective, you're inadequate, you're worthless, you're just average. Average to a narcissist is a big insult. If you ever want to check for that, they're never average to anything. Things are the best or the worst.
And that, it's important to make that point, isn't it? That whole object relations isn't just about other people. With a narcissist, all those things apply to themselves as well. They only ever see themselves as all good or all bad, defective, worthless,
yes,
terrible, or, you know, amazing, unique, special, superior. They can only see themselves like that, and they can only see other people like that.
Absolutely. You're very on target there, because what they do outside is what they're doing inside. They have a harsh, devaluing inner voice that they cannot please. And so they're never quite good enough. So it's on to the next achievement, on to the next achievement. And the same thing with you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've just remembered, Eleanor, what prompted this "you're just costume jewelry" comment. So I went from all good to all bad because I wouldn't go back to his house for coffee after dinner.
Oh, of course. And there's another thing that I'm sensitive to, and many people are, but not everybody is. For me, it's been a sign, intrusiveness. Actually reaching into my space without saying they're sorry, taking food off my plate.
Sense of entitlement, boundary violations, that's what those two things are.
Yeah, it feels like they're not seeing me as separate from them. Again, it's it. Suddenly there's a hand reaching out and taking something. Nowadays, people are doing less reaching onto people's plates because of COVID. So it may not be as apt now, but they're still reaching into your space unexpectedly or commenting on things that you didn't ask for their comments on.
I've had that. I've been told that all Asians have long hair and that to look a bit different, I should get my hair cut into a bob. So I've had that again on a first date.
Well, see, this is what I mean. It's really surprising. You know, the average person doesn't give you so much information on a first date. The narcissists are quite likely to give you a lot of information on a first date.
Information about themselves, you mean?
Yeah. Lots of times with my narcissistic guys, when I get to know them, they're stuck in one of their teenage years vis-a-vis women. So the ones that, if we go back to Casanova, he's stuck scoring. He's stuck when you really wanted approval of other men. And that having sex with women got you to be a big shot with the guys.
Yeah.
That's a really kind of high school thing. Maybe fraternity and college, that level. But it shouldn't still be around scoring. I mean, it was around Casanova's whole life. You know, he never got past it. Sometimes I try and guess, like what year in school, you know, was really important to you? And did you feel like it was more difficult for you, or do you became interested in girls?
Yes.
Because lots of times they're still doing whatever they did then.
Mm-hmm. So they are fixed at an emotional stage of development, and they just haven't moved on from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you've got 10 minutes, you're on a date. What's a closet narcissist going to do? How are they going to give themselves away?
Well, they're going to sound a little neurotic and insecure. Unlike the exhibitionist who's showing off in some fashion, or like the malignant who's devaluing, the closet narcissist, they're sometimes called vulnerable narcissists. I don't like the word covert because there's plenty of covert malignant narcissists. Most of us have at least one in our family and an elderly relative who makes us feel awful if you go visit them.
But that's interesting. Let me just interrupt you there, because most people have one in their family. I would totally agree with that. But they just think of them as being just a bit nasty, or they're just not very nice, or I don't like it. I feel bad when I come away from seeing them. And they haven't actually sort of thought, well, this actually could be a narcissist, a covert malignant narcissist.
Most people dismiss it as, she didn't really mean to say that. She couldn't have meant to hurt my feelings. She's just a crotchety old person. Maybe she's in pain. Maybe she didn't hear me. Maybe I got the date wrong. Whatever, let me cut her some slack. She lives alone ever since her husband died. Maybe she's losing it a little.
People do this with narcissists all the time, don't they? They make excuses. They're having a bad day. They're having some stress at work. They're feeling ill. That's what people naturally do, because you don't want to think, oh, actually, this person is a narcissist, or that was really horrible behavior, I'm not tolerating it. People would rather make excuses for that person so that they don't have to feel bad about thinking badly of someone else.
Exactly. But now let's use my test. How many negative things did she say in an hour? And what did she do in the first 10 minutes? How do I feel? And you don't even have to know what they did. Pay attention to how you feel as a result of what they did in that first 10 minutes.
And, you know, you said about how you feel. Take notice of that sinking heart. Take notice of the fact that, you know, I mentioned that I left that date sort of literally crawling out, absolutely, utterly exhausted. Take notice of the fact that your energy has been drained. You know, your body is telling you, it's sending signals to tell you this isn't right, this isn't right. This is an early warning system. And we just ignore it.
That's true.
Can we just go back to what would a closet narcissist do on that phone in the 10 minutes?
Okay, so there's different types. We're all individuals. There is a certain type that, because they feel so ashamed and insecure, as all narcissists do, but the other ones can mobilize grandiosity. And when you're being grandiose, it's the best drug in the world. You feel invincible. It's sort of like an early hypomanic state or something like that, where you just feel great and you don't question yourself, or someone on good cocaine for the first time or whatever. So if you don't have that, you get a person that compensates very often. So I'm thinking of one subtype of closet narcissist that feels like they have to, things are transactional. You're not going to like them for themselves. They're not going to be funny enough, smart enough, interesting enough. So they feel obligated to do things for you. But this is a martyr type. So in the process of doing this thing for you that they haven't asked, they're late, they're apologizing, and they're giving you something. They bring you a gift. It's too elaborate. Now you're supposed to be so grateful. It's kind of confusing. My feelings are confused at that point because I didn't want them to be late. I wasn't looking to get a gift. I just wanted to meet someone and have this interaction. And now it's about the gift they're giving me and them apologizing for being late. And I'm reassuring them, which I don't want to do, that all of this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow we're off the path of normality, but they're not devaluing anyone. They're overdoing it a bit.
The idea that closet narcissists tend to associate with people who they think of as being special in order to kind of bask in that person's reflected specialness. I'm wondering whether you might get, because I think this would be a bit of a red flag, someone saying, oh, you know, I know the mayor, or they'll tell you possibly someone kind of quite well known or of high status that they know.
If you go into someone's office and you'll see these framed photos on the wall of them shaking hands with important people or people who take selfies with celebrities, you're right. It's a form of acquired status through proximity. However, it's more often than not, they're an exhibitionist if they're doing
right,
that.
Okay.
And they're exhibiting how important they are. Uh-huh. That could be closet too. You're right. I met a woman I may have mentioned on another thing that I was meeting her socially. And what I learned in the first 10 minutes was she used to be Frank Sinatra's secretary.
Uh-huh.
And that would be an example. She was a closet narcissist. This woman looked like a little brown mouse. She was not a glamorous person. She was special by virtue of being connected to Frank Sinatra. And if you think about Nixon's secretary.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of a lunch I went to with someone I discovered to be a closet narcissist. All of that is resonating with me.
So if you feel like you're being bought, but the person is not bragging, they're buying you because they're insecure that they don't have enough to hold you.
Yeah.
That's why people miscause it, even in diagnosis, because people are expecting narcissists to sound more confident.
It's a lot harder. You just don't have those obvious signs, I think, which is why I think that idea of really trying to sort of think about how you feel in the moment.
Yes.
Did your heart sink? Did you feel exhausted afterwards? Did you feel you'd have to do all the work? Did it feel wrong? Did it just feel wrong or awkward, as you say? Don't make excuses for it. If that happens in the first 10 minutes or on the first date, maybe you're allowed one more date. Just don't keep repeating the pattern, because people do. And I think the types of people that do fall into these relationships just keep excusing and they just keep going back ad infinitum until they're trauma bonded and can't actually get out.
Yes.
Thank you so much for chatting to me. It's always brilliant to speak to you.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. It's really lovely to be working with you again. And you and I will talk more.
Yes, definitely. Karen Walker and Supriya McKenna are the authors of the Amazon number one bestseller, Divorcing a Narcissist, The Lure, The Loss and The Law, and of Narcissism and Family Law, A Practitioner's Guide. For more resources, online courses, and one-to-one coaching, please do visit drsupriya.com or thelifedoctor.org.
My brand new book, Narcissists in Divorce, From Lovelocked to Leaving, is out now. For more information and online courses about narcissism, please do check out my websites, thelifedoctor.org or drsupriya.com.